Welcome to the Dark Zone, the Venturist Podcast. This is your host, Brian Gatens. A special flash episode of the Dark Zone coming today. We have assembled a crack team of analysts from all over the globe. We have Ashley Eaton, all the way from South Africa, in a car, bouncing along the course, telling us about it there. We have Jason Magnus of Bend Racing, out west in Oregon on a family camping trip. And we have Abby Perkis and Brent Friedland of Rootstock Racing in their house in Philadelphia. Thank you to Jeff O'Connor of Adventure Racing Insider for his work in helping to produce this version of the Dark Zone. No intro, no outro, nothing, no music, no movie quotes. We're going right into the analysis. This was recorded on Saturday, October 21st in the morning, Eastern Standard Time. The teams are right now between T2 and T3 on the course. There's a lot going on. We get into it. We're glad you're here and enjoy this episode of The Dark Zone, a flash episode of The Dark Zone, all about the Adventure Racing World Series being held in South Africa. Enjoy the show. Dark Zone, we are delighted that you're all here. The first person I want to hop into is Brent Friedland, who's been feverishly watching the trackers. Brent, walk us through the pointy end of the race a little bit, and then we're going to pop over to Jason, because I know the two of you have been going deep on what's going on out there.
Yeah, so thanks, Brian, for having me and the rest of us on this morning. It's been an exciting race to follow. This morning when I woke up, I posted this on the North American ARWS page and also on our Rootstock Racing page. So some people may have seen this analysis, others may not have. But when I popped up, woke up this morning, I pulled up the tracker and I was really curious to see how things were going on the river, because as we all know, there's a dark zone that is falling in, I believe, roughly 2.5 hours. Local South African time. I think 1 p.m. correct. East Coast time here, we'll see the dark zone fall. And so the question was, who's going to make it through? And this morning when I woke up, all I could see was really updated data for Swedish Armed Forces. Estonia had not tracked in a while. And I put together a spreadsheet analyzing where they were. They were roughly halfway from the put-in down to the bridge. At the bridge, for those that haven't followed this, there's several bridges, but at this one bridge, roughly 10 kilometers away from the end of the paddle, they are allowed to keep paddling after dark. So the bridge is effectively the beginning of the dark zone. I looked at the math. They were roughly halfway there. I threw together a spreadsheet, and I basically found that if they paddled at the exact same rate for that second half of the paddle, they would hit the bridge roughly around 5:30-ish p.m. The good news is they're there now. And so they're there, I think, before my projection, which could mean a few things. You know, it may be that most of the portaging happened upriver of where they were this morning, so the second half was faster. You know, sometimes, if the water flow stayed fast, maybe without some of the rapids that were upriver, they actually traveled faster downriver. Whatever, it doesn't matter, they're moving faster. What this means is my morning projection that we might only see three teams make the dark zone, it now looks like fourth and fifth place are definitely going to make it, barring something going wrong or whatever that might be, but the French should make it. I think Merrill Songline should make it. Bend Racing was not popping up until very recently, and they look like they have a shot. Maybe Jason's looked at it closer. I don't want to make any projections, but I think it'll probably be close for them one way or the other. But it's exciting because that'll mean that our North American favorite team will have an opportunity to stay in the hunt there for not just top five, but top three without having to make up a ton of ground over the next couple of days.
So it sounds like we have six teams at the pointy end of the race that are mostly going to make that dark zone. And for those listening at home and those watching at home, the dark zone, obviously, first off, thank you to Stefan for the free advertising, having such a big dark zone. We appreciate that back here in Dark Zone World headquarters. That those teams are going to have to pull off to the side of the river. And there's a big, big time gap that's going to happen. If those six teams make it through, they keep racing and everybody else slows down behind them. Jason, I know you're on the cliff. I know you're with the family. If you're still with us, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I am here. And I think, this is a really well-designed course. It does divide the field, but that really kind of forces these top teams to play the strategy. And I think that it got even more interesting because the time estimates from the beginning made it seem like a lot of teams were going to make that. because the trek was, you know, 17, 18, 19 hours. And I think it took, Brent will probably know, I think it took the Swedes 22 hours, Estonia. So it basically put, you know, the game wasn't, can we get before the river and get some sleep before we get on the river because we're not allowed to start it. The game became, can we get there and even get off? So it has changed the race significantly for the rest of the top 10 as well. You know, I think we're all rooting for Ben to make it. I think it's going to be a nail biter. I think as well, looking at it, they do have a chance. If anybody can pull it out, it's Dan. I've paddled, you know, thousands of miles with Dan, set world records with that guy. And if he puts his mind to it and has a fire, he could probably power that whole four-person kayak team, you know, a K or two an hour faster to make it. So, but I think then, you know, you've got this amazing race that's going to shape up for the rest of the top 10, for, you know, for even the top 20. So you're going to see this, you know, what's really exciting for Dot Watchers is you're going to see this play out again on the second time the Dark Zone comes around. Right, for these teams that are trying to get in the top 20, top 25.
Right, and to your point there, Jason, there's several races. There's one big race going on, and there's several races happening inside the race. Right, there's these five, hopefully six. Let's go, Dan. Let's go, Ben. Those teams making the cutoff, making the Dark Zone, and they will become the front of the race, and we'll see them continue racing and how their sleep strategy goes in there. Behind them is a whole slate of other races who are fighting for the top 10, top 20. Earlier this morning, those of you who were watching the pages realized that due to the weather and the cold, the Adventure Racing World Series is making adjustments to the course where T2 to T3, which is the 80-kilometer trek, is being adjusted because of the weather. Teams are being shuttled. But there's a lot of people already on that part of the course. Abby, I want to come to you with this next question here. You've directed big races. You've had the chance to see teams out there. Talk to me a bit about the tail of the race, talking about a race director's perspective, that many teams on the course, how to address the weather, what do you think is happening right now inside of the world headquarters in terms of preparing the teams for what's happening now between T2 and T3?
Yeah, it's a great question. And when we saw that news, I hadn't looked at the tracker yet this morning and assumed that there were more teams that would be impacted by that. There's a very small number of teams that are either, or when this news was announced, that were either in TA2 or hadn't made it there yet. So presumably those are the teams that are going to be moved up to TA3. And then the teams that are on that leg will obviously skip the rappel, but will continue on and be able to get to TA3. I think it was a smart move by the race directors. I think they designed a large course, an ambitious course, and they knew that going in, right? We had a long conversation with Heidi a few weeks ago, and she said the reason we're keeping this course open for 9 days is because we designed a course that wasn't going to be, you know, shortable for most folks. And so they've made a decision that I think was clearly impacted by the weather, but gives these teams an opportunity to continue on and potentially to do some of the trekking later in the race as well. So, you know, the weather in some ways provided that opportunity for them, as well as being able, allowing them to make decisions that ensure the safety of the field.
Exactly. And as a race director, and you've all directed races and you've done that before, is that you want to keep your racers on the course, right? They've traveled a long way. You want them to have an experience. And anybody who knows adventure race knows that there's adjustments to the course. Teams are brought ahead, teams, they return to TAs, things like that. And so to your credit, I think that, and your point is that Heidi is spot on in what Heidi and Stefan have done in regards to the course, knowing that this was going to happen. Before we came on the air, Jeff O'Connor, who's behind the scenes doing a great job for us, thank you, Jeff. We were taking a look at the tracker at T2, transition two. And there were a variety of teams that had left T2, had gone north, appeared to punch the next CP, and then were returning back down to T2. So I don't know if that's because they said, listen, transport's going to be here in a couple hours or so. Go get that point and come back. We'll transport you. But there are some teams that have turned around and are heading back down to T2. Which I think is an interesting thing to see. Rarely do you see teams going backwards on a course, and I think that was part of that strategy. The other member of our panel here, somebody right now, is in South Africa, who is in a car. She has Evan over her right shoulder. We have Ashley Eaton, who is doing media from Strong Machine Adventure Racing, our favorite team coming out of Maine in the Northeast. Ashley, let's hope your signal holds it together. You're there right now. How's it going? Walk us through it.
Yeah, we're headed right now up to TA3. We're about an hour and a half away. it is a tough course. I mean, just like you saw the heat. So folks rolling out of day one, going through the dunes, into then swim overnight. It was hot. People already had pretty intense foot issues arising on day one, which I feel like for an expedition of this length, you know, is concerning. So there was a lot of foot care happening at day one. Our team was particularly concerned about foot care. And then heading out onto that monster bike, I think, you know, we felt that bike pretty hard. You know, Evan had a crash pretty early on. They had left the TA around 2 a.m. And about 20 kilometers in had crashed. I think for Northeast folks, you'll understand the roads are, imagine mud season. And then overnight, so sloshy, wet, freezing overnight, immediately hard, like hard packed. There's the, you know, I think the soil compaction out here, because it is so dry, even though they're dirt roads, you're falling on pavement. Like, it's hard. There's ruts everywhere. So teams were cruising through that bike, but it was not a small feat, especially at night. It's just a lot of heat stuff. Teams, even Emily and I were up at kind of midway between 13 and 14 up on that little high rise before you roll into the dunes. And I mean, there was carnage already, even from, you know, very fit athletes. Top teams were feeling the heat, feeling that climb. And so I think it's just pushing through. And the weather has been so varied today that yesterday we were worried about heat, and now we're worried about, you know, being cooled. A couple of the teams going into the kayak, one team dumped, I think Estonia dumped their kayak early on in that paddling. So going into the water today, you know, we're hoping that strong machine doesn't end up in the water early tomorrow morning if that's what they had on the paddle.
Great. Ashley, thank you for that. And blessedly, your signal is holding itself together really strong. I noticed that we just dropped Jason off the call. I'm sure that Jason is going to come back on. Oh, he's back. Jason's back. Just like a bad penny. He keeps turning up for great stuff. I see a hand raised, Abby, for you. Go ahead.
Yeah, there was a video of Dan and Emily at one of the portages from Bend, and they mentioned that one of their boats had tipped early in the water as well, and one of the twosomes had gone in. So clearly there's some spice on the water and compounding the cold. You know, everybody will be feeling the impact of both being in the water and having water come down on them in the rain.
And I think, you know, we always like to point to our conversation around the newer racer too, right? And so for those who are at home or new adventure racing, World Championship is a big bear of a race, but there are some things that exist no matter what, and that's gear choice, right? And carrying, getting on the water, keeping your gear dry, having enough clothes to stay warm, but not carrying too many that you're overloaded with weight. And on all of that is kind of going along there. And I'm not surprised by this, but I am taken aback just at the pure temperature things we're seeing, that the temperatures are just so up and down and they're just all over the place. And clearly teams are from the heat of the first day where teams look smoked to now all of a sudden we're talking, going about the idea of the cold impacting it. Ashley, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say on the point about gear, you know, our team basically in all their bids based on the pretty strict limits of 25 kilos pretty much only have food. So the clothing or any frills that they wanted, like they needed to carry with them. And so a lot of stuff got dropped at the last minute for not only us. I mean, the check-in station for those bins, people were pulling all kinds of stuff out, including our team was basically pulling out a lot of food and hoping that they would find it on the way. So they were short on food just because of the weight limits. And so, yeah, a lot of those poor players, things that folks might have wanted post paddle, you know, they're not going to have as many options as maybe they want to. So I think that'll be interesting as well.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you have to go with the gear you have, not the gear you want, right? And with the strict limits, with the 109 teams moving around the course, you know, they were very, very clear about how much weight you could or could not carry. I'm curious, Abby, if you want to talk a bit about, I know that you have a chance to talk to Heidi Muller, who's the CEO of ARWS, the challenges of all of this, the challenges of reporting from the field, the challenges of the media. What did Heidi share with you?
Yeah, one of the conversations we had, and it was Brent Jason and I were on with her a couple weeks ago talking about their goals for reporting on it and what we could do back in North America to support that. As we're all saying, it's a gigantic course for the racers, and it's an even bigger course for the folks that are driving between TAs. Ashley could speak more to the distances, but I can't remember the kilometers Heidi mentioned, but it was astounding, you know, coming from directing Endless Mountains where things are relatively close together and driving between TAs, you know, we can make those trips without much of an issue. I mean, she was talking about hundreds of kilometers out of the way for folks to drive between TAs. And then in South Africa, the infrastructure for being able to have embedded media to report live from the ground is really at the whim of the power grid, at the whim of kind of satellite coverage. And Heidi often shares with us as we're, you know, on calls with her, the rolling blackouts that they experience in South Africa. And there could be a situation, and from everything we're seeing, that hasn't happened yet, that they could have a blackout on one section of the course, and then it would roll to the next section of the course, and then to the next section of the course. So over an 18-hour period, there would be no ability to cover the course for those three discrete sections. And they don't have Starlink in South Africa. They don't have some of the same capacities that we have in Pennsylvania and Bend to be able to report even when there's no cellular coverage. So it seems like they've managed it incredibly well. The reporting that Sharla and others are doing from the field, Mark Harris and James Thurlow, and forgive me, I don't know the name of the third person, who were working feverishly to move the tracking to open tracking based out of the UK in order to support the massive influx of people watching the race. Like, they have been incredibly responsive to the needs of us at home to be able to keep track of it. So kudos to everyone on the ground, and we're all keeping our fingers crossed that the power grid continues to cooperate.
Yeah, the use, as someone who's interested in adventure race media and knowing the challenges of the South African grid and all that we've talked about there, I'm impressed by the continued ongoing live coverage we're seeing from the field. That magic microphone that is being used by Sharla, I want to order 10 of those, and we'll see those at races here in America. So really doing a good job there with that. As I look over at Brent, I see Brent is watching his eyes, and he's looking at the tracker, obviously. He's, I have thoughts going on there. Brent, as we're talking here about that, talk to me a bit about, I think in many ways the paddle for those teams at the front, those six teams, are really going to be decisive. What do you think is going on there in terms of the portages and moving the paddles and getting the kayaks around? What is it like right now for those teams in the front when they're balancing speed versus staying at the front versus conserving themselves?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I don't know exactly where those portages are, which may or may not really matter. But, you know, I'll speak from my point of view, which is honestly very different than I think all of those teams that are currently doing it. I am, you know, 5 foot nothing. I mean, I'm actually 5'5", but Abby's about 5 foot nothing. And when we have to be hauling around boats and bags and weights, right, that gets... It's tiring. And I think even for the lead teams, right, that just adds this extra level of fatigue. I think for a team like Bend right now, who is probably absolutely hammering to make that dark zone, and they're having to haul their stuff over all of those weirs and whatever else they're contending with, you know, it definitely takes something out of you. And as you all talked about earlier, the temperature swings have been incredible, and I think it put extra strain on people's bodies. So, you know, I think it's probably a pretty brutal section for these leaders who are fighting against the dark zone. I think it'll be a very, you know, in some ways different experience for some teams later in the race who are on that paddle, knowing that they're gonna get dark zone, not all that concerned about, you know, maximizing every minute and, you know, every second on those portages. I will say that there's one interesting little note. I don't really know whether we should bring it up, but it was in the video update from Bend Portaging, where at the end of the video, Sharla is talking to Dan, and Dan noted on the video that it looked like a number of the lead teams had been dragging their boats around some of the other portages. I just spent some time looking through the rules, and as Dan said in the video, it is written that teams are disqualified if they drag their boats. I don't really know how you can actually go back retroactively and figure out which of the five teams did or did not do that. So I don't know if there is a good way to adjudicate that, but it's interesting, right? I think it'll be an interesting thing to see if there's any note about that as we see things unfold.
What I want to do is I want to bounce over to Jason for a second. And Jason, here's the question I want to address there. Two things. First off, as much as you have capacity to speak to or not to that video and what was shared by Dan, that's one thing. The second thing also is right now, a team that you know well, the team that you race alongside, that I would love for you to walk us through what you think, where they are right now mentally and what they are doing to stay competitive in the race in terms of the way they're treating themselves. How hard are they going? Things like that. So Jason, take it away.
First off, you know, I think it is interesting as a race director and, you know, the role of the referees. I think we can learn from that as we go as race directors. And I mean, that's a tough rule. And I wish that rule wasn't in there because, you know, as I'm watching Ben struggle to literally carry the kayaks through the rough, you know, rolling grass and not drag them, that's got to be a brutal blow when you get, you know, and see this well-worn drag path ahead of you to be like, hey, those guys are supposed to be dragging their kayaks. So it's almost better to leave those rules out unless you're prepared to really enforce them as a race director. And it sucks to think about enforcing something that could potentially disqualify or penalize one of the lead teams for doing something like that, unless it's the most important thing to you. So, you know, I think that that's interesting. I think that they will have to come up with some answer because it is public. It was on the screens and it is a very competitive race, world championships. If you're going to put a rule in there and you're not going to enforce it, then what use are the rules? That said, it doesn't really bother me, you know, how that comes out. It's more of an interesting race director thing. But yeah, I mean, Bend is pushing. I know that they slept because we have very, very strict team protocols. And I think that, you know, you saw all those lead teams sleep because they knew they needed to sleep. Otherwise, they were going to literally fall apart. And we saw, I think it was Absolute Raid and Merrill, who were obviously sleep deprived and really struggling to find one of the checkpoints on that trek. So I know Bend is very focused. And they, you know, all these teams, especially Bend, knows that it's make or break. Their, you know, their goal is solidly to be in the top five, and they have this chance. And not that it's not impossible, like Brent was saying, to bridge that gap, but it's a much less likely issue. And Ben does have a strong late game. The way that they race is, I don't want to say conservative, but they really keep track of where they are mentally and physically, and they will have a strong finish. So I'm just really, I know that they're pushing for it, and they're really good tacticians and aware of it, but rivers are strange things, and you know, time can get sucked away without a lot of progress, or they could make it very easily. So, you know, I will be watching the tracker incessantly until, you know, it's either yes or no, and then they just have to deal. I think the big thing is they just have to deal with whatever happens and make the best of the rest of the race.
Ashley, hopefully your signal's still holding on there. Are you still got us, Ashley?
Here.
Beautiful. What I want to do is you're literally our voice, our eyes there right now. And I'm going to come to Brent in a few minutes to talk about the North American teams and how they're doing in the race. I do want to give some attention to them. But actually, I know that our audience out there is dying and desperate to know about the entire vibe, the things you're seeing, what you're seeing in the TAs. What is it like for you to be a witness to all of this and just be embedded in this adventure?
That is such a great question. I mean, as you just tell, looking at the parts, right, that's brutal. But the vibes are good overall. Like, every team has things that they are struggling with, but the courts, it's everything is beautiful. Everything is, you know, I think it's one of the reasons where I feel like, sure, if I have added 50 kilometers, like, that's it. But, you know, and I'll go back to that one spot, like between 13 and 14 yesterday. I mean, teams were, they were so hot. They were miserable. It was not ideal. People were pushing it, especially that top pack. But Emily and I literally watched people press this like crazy sand dune climb and then look out over some of the largest sand dunes in the Southern Hemisphere. And it was just like magic on the face. Like everything melted away, all of the pain. And so I think the course is kind of keeping people alive, and all of these features like the abseil, and these, like, they really are just these wonderful experiences, and they're just pushing through to get there. I mean, with so many team media, like, that's definitely been a different vibe than any other race that I've been at. There are so many team media covering so many different points of the race. The media guy has been great about where media can be, like,
First off, so Ashley, you're breaking up a little bit right there. So it's okay. You're fine, Ashley. You're doing great, and holy cow, the signal's held together, and I feel like it's great. But what I want to do here is I want to go to Brent in a second, but I want to set Abby up for a question first. So Abby, you can think a bit about it when I give it over to Brent. Abby, there's a lot of race that is left out there, right? We're sitting here now, we're watching the trackers for people to make it to the bridge and then cut off the end of the paddle and all of that. So I want you to talk a bit about how much more we have lying in front of us for this race. Like, because we're not there just yet. And that's the thing about adventure racing. This is days we're talking about. This isn't some 60-minute football game that we play in a, you know, in a stadium and it's fun and it's over in 3 hours. This is a multi-day race. So I want to come back to you in a minute to talk about the rest of the race in front of us and what's that going to be like for those teams. But Brent, I want to come to you a bit about the dot watching for the North American teams we're seeing out there, and also whatever you want to add in terms of the vibe and that we're seeing out there. Go ahead.
Yeah. I know Ashley was breaking up there a bit, and you know, she was kind of talking about the vibe being good, and then it got a little hard to follow. You know, I think I might be the only one on the call that's done a race produced by Heidi and Stefan. I don't think Bend has been down to South Africa or India before. And I would just add, not obviously being there on the ground this year, it is really a special race from that perspective. You know, Heidi and Stefan put together a really amazing event. And, you know, arguably the thing that's most special about their races is the vibe. It's incredibly positive. They have an unbelievable staff of volunteers who are, you know, like, just like as supportive as you possibly could be. You know, so I'm sure that despite it being a hard race, and their races are always challenging physically. I mean, I did one of their India races, and it was definitely a challenging event in all kinds of ways. But, you know, it was impossible to get down when you might normally want to get down, or actually get down, because they just would find ways to lift you up. So, yeah.
I agree.
You know, as for the North American kind of scene, you know, I posted a little while ago kind of just a quick rundown of how everyone's doing. Not much has changed there overall. You know, to an earlier point that Jason made, it took Estonia, who's effectively the lead team, 26 hours to complete that trek, including potentially some sleeping in a TA. I don't know where they slept, but you know, it was 26 hours on the tracking map from T2 to T3. So for some of these other North American teams and dozens upon dozens of other teams from other countries, they're gonna be on this trek for probably at least 48 hours, possibly as long as, you know, 50 or even more hours. The thing that I was just looking at, which just caught my attention, is I was kind of scrolling through our North American teams, and I ended up looking back, and the back three North American teams, who are toward the back of the pack overall, they all got out on the trek before the course was changed. But what I'm noticing is, you know, JD and Tomas's team, Aventura, two Americans racing with, I think, a couple of South Africans, they clearly are now heading back to the TA from the first checkpoint. I don't know if somebody directed them to turn around, but they are very clearly heading back to town. The other two teams, and, you know, again, 2 hours ago when I put together my last post, there were three teams, including that team, all pretty close to the first checkpoint of the race. The other two clearly have been struggling up there. And there's the possibility that Teaneck Mexico is also heading back down. That's not clear. They may still be looking for the checkpoint. And Wild Warriors has been doing quite a bit of walkabout looking for the point, and it doesn't look like they have found it either, unless they've also been turned around. I don't know.
Yeah, my guess is... Good. Yeah, I'm kind of guessing that they might have gotten someone to one of those checkpoints, and they're telling teams, this is great, go back.
I think they might be hunting some teams down at the back, yeah, possibly, and maybe suggesting they go back. I don't know. But either way, you know, even some of the teams that are clearly ahead of them, you know, they're going to be out there, you know, obviously for the rest of today, but also tonight and probably much of the day tomorrow, and maybe part of tomorrow night, maybe all of tomorrow night. It's going to be a long, long section for a lot of our friends out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's really something else. And to that point, and, you know, Abby, we're going to come to you for a second, Abby, but to that point, Stefan was very, very clear when I had spoken with him before we did our course preview, that the linear nature of this course means that when you are out there, that you are out there. And with there being 109 teams, over being 400 racers, it's not like you're going to send a bus to go get people. right? You're going to send buses. And we all recognize that where we are, that the terrain and the infrastructure and all that. So these teams, you are committed to this race, committed to this race. Abby, before I come to you, Jeff, doing production in the back, do me a favor on the video you have, on the visual you had. Pull back a little bit and try to show the breadth of the course. In the upper right-hand corner, we're going to see all of the cluster of the teams, and then we're going to see all the course that they have left in front of them. Abby, the rest of the course, the rest of the experience for the racers, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's massive, right? They get off the paddle. They have just a short trek to the next TA. I think it's 3 kilometers. And then they're getting on a 224-kilometer bike ride. So the first bike ride was 180 kilometers. This one is 65 kilometers longer. And for teams, they have to finish that bike ride by 1 p.m. on Wednesday. For teams that miss that cutoff, they're going straight from that bike ride into another 124-kilometer bike ride. So they're effectively biking, what, 350 kilometers at one stretch, those teams that miss that Wednesday cutoff. For teams that make the Wednesday cutoff, they have a 64-kilometer trek with about 1,500 meters of elevation gain in it. So, between the first and the third stage in terms of distance and elevation, but certainly a burly section on their feet. And then after that 160 kilometer bike ride, they finish out the race with, I believe, another trek.
Yep.
Yeah, another trek as well. So what, like a 30 kilometer trek? I'm not seeing that one coming up on my screen. Oh, a 30 kilometer trek and then another bike ride. No, sorry, reading the route book, the 160 mile bike ride is the alternate route. Yeah, so they end with a 30 kilometer trek. So there is a ton of course left. And this is actually something Brent and I were talking about this morning in relation to the dark zone. We were remembering, we couldn't remember if it was Costa Rica or Ecuador. Jason, you might recall, but Ecuador Movistar was a team in the hunt for podium, and they literally got dark zoned a kilometer from the takeout of the paddle. We were speculating, could you see their lights from the takeout from the TA? But they had to stop on the side of the river and camp for the night. And they ended up just steamrolling through the rest of the course because they got that massive sleep and other teams who made it to the TA didn't. So it'll be interesting, those teams that are on the cusp of the dark zone and end up having to sleep on the water, if they're able to get quality sleep on the water, do they end up having a little bit more gas in the tank, whereas the teams that make it through won't get to take that big, massive sleep at all? I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that the teams that make it through the dark zone will end up being the teams in the top five. There's so much course left. And as Ashley said, it's burly terrain. The navigation is trickier than it looks on the map. Like, there's a lot that can happen.
If you look at if you go back and you listen to the Dark Zone preview episode with Stefan, one thing I did take out of it was the fact that as you get towards the back half of the course, you do pass through more populated areas. So there will be opportunities for teams to grab a room, to get a bite to eat. And the course moves from more remote to less remote as we go through. And by then there will be teams that will absolutely need a good rest and a good sleep and making those cutoffs and along those lines. We want to get into the prediction game in a second. So Jason, I'm going to come back to you and talking about how you think this is going to unfold, let's assume, let's cheer for our friends, that Bend makes it off the water in time. Let that be our assumption. But before we go there, Ashley, are you still with us?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Excellent. Yes, Ashley, we can hear you. What I would love to do, Ashley, is I want to honor the effort that you're going through and being out with us right now and being in the car. So I want to come to you, and then we're going to go to Jason. Ashley, give us a chance to talk about how do you see this race unfolding from where you're seeing it on the ground? The weather, the terrain, you're the closest to the race course ourselves. How are teams going to do going into the next few days? What's your gut tell you?
Yeah, I mean, I do think we're going to see, as you talked about, the course is big and there's no feel. You're not dropping picks anywhere, right? Like, you have to purpose through and get each leg. There's really not, unless you end up on the short course at the end, you're not really dropping picks. So I think if teams are, doing a good job with their sleep strategy, I think after this next, getting off this track is going to be huge for folks, getting recovered and heading out on that big bike. But I think once they get to the next TA, there is this canyon that they're going to go through, and it is supposed to be wonderful. And so I feel like that will be a really great, that's going to be a big morale boost for teams getting there and going through that, especially if they're going through it during the day. in the terrain is going to change. Oh, it's going to change a little drastically. So I think kind of that change up will keep teams coming. I mean, folks look strong out there. I think they know what they're in for. Vibes are great. Like, it's a tough race, but the vibes really are good. Teams are having a blast. There is, like, it's a big party, more or less, like, at every TA. And so I think vibes are good. Teams are hurting more than others, but that's just the name of the game.
Gotcha. Exactly. And what we will do down the road is the Dark Zone will, of course, we'll have another, we'll talk to the champion at the end of the race, but we definitely want to pull out a couple teams that have just had a heck of experience. One of my hopeful guests eventually has always been Strong Machine to get them on all together. So Ashley, your job is to make sure they get in front of a microphone in a few days and I can have them hopefully when they're done hallucinating. So thank you for that, Ashley. Jason, popping down to you. Prediction is the pursuit of fools, but let's give it a shot. What are you thinking for the race? The pointy end.
I think the front is going to blow, right? I think that the teams that make the Dark Zone make it off the river. One of the challenging things is, you know, like we're talking about with movie stars, sometimes that sleep can really help. And I think the prevalence of the teams or the what they're going to push towards is race like, oh, we made it through the Dark Zone, so now we're in this great position. And those teams or two of those teams will potentially push too hard, which does open up the potential, like Brazil Multisport or Raid, who did not make it off the paddle, will sleep. We know how fast those guys are when they're rested. So I really see the teams that are current understand and have had the experience. You know, the thing that I know is a lot of teams that did not start really strong or in the top 10 are now they've got the experience. They raced all back when 9 days was normal, and that hasn't happened for years. So I think I know they've come so close the last couple of years, and I like to think that they've learned from those mistakes and are going to race a little bit more of their own race instead of racing the top. And I think Estonia for number one. I'm gonna say that the bend is going to end up in the top five because go there, and then the rest is going to be I don't know who's going to blow up, but I'm looking for somebody to blow up at that pointy end. And then I really think we're going to see a strong surge from Beaterade and Brazil Multisport as they really try to bridge that gap and get into the top five.
It's funny, as you mentioned, Vitarade, heads nodded all across the podcast right now because, don't count them out. They're going to be there. And for those who are at home and who are following here, those six teams that we're seeing at the front is that this is so much course left and so much they have to see. And you know, the sleep strategy being what it is. And I think the top 10 is the battle for the top 10. And remember, these are the world championships we're talking about, right? This is, and to go top 10 in the world is so important. And these teams are going to get a sense of where they are in the race and how they're doing. And I 100% agree that the speed at which some of these teams are traveling now is simply not going to be sustainable. They're not going to be able to carry that all the way through. And so, like I said, we have a lot of race left, a lot to unfold. We have been fortunately blessed with good reception. Even when both Ashley and Jason were breaking up a little bit, we were all playing the let's figure out what they're saying game in our head. And I think we came across loud and clear. What I don't want to do is I don't want to tempt the connectivity gods any further. So I'm going to wrap it up now and let all of us continue with our day. For our listeners out there, what we're hoping to do is if I rustle this crowd up again sometime over the next several days, we're going to do this to see who we can get on the podcast to talk a bit more about it. I am very, very grateful to Jason and to Abby and to Brent and to Ashley for finding the time to make it on today, whether it be on a family camping trip, heading out to a bar mitzvah, or being in a car in South Africa. We live completely in the future, and we are so, so blessed to have that happening to us. Before we close it out, does anyone want to dive in with any closing thoughts? You're all much smarter than me, so feel free to go for it.
I'll just add, I think the most fascinating thing for me watching, if I haven't broken up yet, is that as grumbly as I know a lot of teams are about the weight limits, the only two bins, and the weight limits. And I know that there was a lot of grumbling. I saw footage. I talked to people on the ground. There were like chaotic lines, people pulling everything out of their bins. But the cornerstone of this sport is adaptability and perseverance. And I think for a world championship to force that on racers, whether it was intentional or not, like there are racers that don't think it's possible to do this course on the amount of gear that they have, but you got to try and you got to learn and adapt. And I think that that is a huge, huge fun thing as a dot watcher. I don't know if I'd be having fun there, but you know, I know talking to Andy, who was there with Fear of Youth, like they were literally pulling so much stuff out of their bins because they were, you know, 4 kilograms, you know, instead of 25 with all their food. So I think that that kind of thing, these meticulous planning teams are going to stand an advantage later on when it's chaos. So that's fun to watch as well.
Exactly. And you're right. And I think the gear limits and the weight and how that's going to fold, how that unfolding was really something to watch beforehand. I was on the team WhatsApp chat as was going through, and it was the wildest chat in the history of WhatsApp because everyone was talking about it and what to keep, what not to keep, where to do it. So I think that I think the preparation logistics planning is going to be a huge part later on in the race. Anybody else? Go ahead, Brent.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm interested to see what the weather does. You know, we've already talked about it, but I have a feeling we're not done with the swings. You know, they're kind of part of this race is, or a large part of it is through kind of semi-arid, almost arid areas. And, you know, what we're seeing is what you might expect from, you know, somewhat desert-like environments of hot days and cold nights. And now we're seeing rain, which is, you know, going to make it all that much harder. And I actually hadn't heard about some of the gear complaints. So thanks for that update, Jason. And that makes that sort of management that much harder when your clothes just, you only have so much and you don't have exactly what you need. This big bike leg, this 250 kilometer bike, you know, followed by another 150 kilometer bike not long after. You know, we've already seen 11 teams go non-competitive, including some really good teams. And Black Hill Opavet, you know, a top 5 to top 10 team year after year is out of the race. And, you know,
how about Tiki doing Tour?
Yeah. And, you know, so bummed about that. I was so excited to watch, you know, a team of Kiwis captained by Chris Form, but without the other Avaya folks race. And it's a strong group of Kiwis. So that was a disappointment. Though I'll say I'm actually having fun watching them now move, and they are rapidly climbing up the ladder. you know, so kind of interesting to see, even if it's not an official team, what that strong Kiwis can do with a navigator like Chris Forn leading them. So it's going to be fun to watch them, even if it doesn't actually matter.
Ashley, Abby, anything you want to close us out with? Any thoughts?
Go ahead, Ash.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, keep an eye on the weather. It's kind of microclimate-y, so as folks move through, it's going to be changing. It'll be changing rapidly. I think what one team is experiencing, you know, 50K away might be different than a team that's right behind them or right in front of them. And I think that matters. And, I, you know, to Jason and Brett's point, the kind of, I was calling it a no-frills race. There's no extra gear. You know, some people are only doing one pair of shoes. And I think for the teams that are going to be on the course longer, I'm interested to see how that pans out. I think there's going to need to be some strategic food choices. I think we might see teams doing kind of interesting things to kind of offset some of that. So I think there's a lot of race left. There'll be a lot more to comment on, I'm sure, in the next few days.
Sure. And Abby, just one second, we'll come to you in a moment to close us out. Abby, I want you to give the final word here. It's tough with us to get a final word in. But I do want to point out that a team that we know and love is Team Fear Youth, which obviously Andy Magnus, who's Jason's brother, is involved with. They are sitting right now, if I believe, in eighth place. So someone feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. Their combined age of 76 years total is less than the oldest competitor, who is 77 years old. So youth is not wasted on the young. Well done, Fear Youth. I want to call them out real quickly for their success there. Just as I've done that for them, does anybody want to call out any specific teams that they're watching and rooting and cheering for?
I'll shout out this ability. Having a great race, you know, and, you know, we all know them. You know, I'm not sure that, you know, the entire world necessarily pays attention to U.S. racing. But they're a team that's been just racing and learning and learning. And they're like bulldogs when it comes to, I think, learning about the sport and just continuously striving for more and to do better. And they're running a great race. They're really well positioned.
Agreed.
I think they have set themselves up for a real shot at finishing the full course, which I'm sure was a big goal of theirs. And they seem to be executing really well. They're beating a lot of really good teams. So really impressed.
Very nice. Very nice. Now, I saw that Jason was speaking probably to a younger child there for a second. Jason, aside from Fear Youth, which you have a strong connection to, and obviously we have Skin Racing, we have Ben Racing Skin Doctor in the race there. Anybody else you want to call out?
You know, I'll echo Brent. I'm always impressed with those guys at Disability. And over the last year, it's been amazing. I'm also really watching Ozark. They've kind of come on the stream. They're new race directors, but they're also, you know, they're right behind Disability, I think, but they're, you know, they're doing well and obviously going to learn a lot. And I just am really excited to see so many US and North American racers over there. I'm a little surprised at the position of the Team Penticton, who are really strong racers with Ben Kiewoski. I can't pronounce his last name, but he's surprised me at Expedition Oregon and everything he's done. So I expected to see them a little bit further up, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they still ended up in the top 20 with their experience. So it's just so exciting to see the North American scene growing with the ARWS.
I just want to call out for Team Ozark. James Gallopo was on that. As on that team, and his, and I want to, James Horstel, who's one of the nicest guys at adventure racing, plus his wife Kara, who saved my cookies in the Faroe Islands. So James, keep racing there. Good job there. Brent, I think you might want to go with, I think you're looking to add one more, and then Abby, you're going to close us out no matter what happens. So Brent, go ahead.
Yeah, kind of leaving North America, the other team that I've just been really having a great time watching is actually the team that on the leaderboard I think is ranked fourth, but I think they're tracking in fifth. Absolute Raid. They're a French team. They're not one of those names that I think a lot of people have known year after year after year. They're a really experienced group. We raced alongside two of them, I believe, at Worlds in 2017 in Wyoming. I can't remember if we finished just ahead of them or just behind them. But, you know, I've kind of seen the athletes on that team, at least a couple of them, Kiara and Lionel in particular, really elevating the last few years on the European race scene. And to see them racing so well, you know, there's still a lot of race, so it'll be interesting to see if they can maintain it. But they really, I think a lot of teams probably aren't that familiar with that, at least the team name, if not the personnel. So fun to see them having so much success.
Great. Thank you, Brent. Abby, take us home.
No, I think what all of these teams that people are shouting out indicates, and what Ashley said a few minutes ago, you know, we have multiple races taking place right now. Brent and I were doing the math earlier this morning or last night. I can't remember. There are, I think, five past world champions out on the course outside of Swedish Armed Forces, right? And there are a number of folks for whom I'm sure this is their first adventure or first multi-day race, if not first adventure race. There's a family out there of brothers from around the world who are racing with each, you know, there's five people on the team and one of them is cycling in and out so that some of the folks on the team can get some rest. There's so many individual stories, but there are so many races within as well. We have this race for the podium. We have those folks that are going to finish in 4.5, 5, 6 days. And then we have the people that will be out there clawing their way to the finish till day 9. And I think even though they're all on the same course, the experiences that they're having within the teams and across the teams is something we should all be paying close attention to and giving voice to as we continue through. So I'm glad that you're going to give the opportunity for folks to come back on in a few days once the top fleet teams have finished, and we'll get to dive into some of those other stories as well.
So, Abby, wonderful way to finish up there. Thank you to our panel for being here. Thanks to Jeff O'Connor, Adventure Racing Insider, behind the scenes, producing all of our content. This is Brian from the Dark Zone. Be safe out there, everyone. The next best thing to adventure racing is talking about adventure racing. And we have a chance to bring you all here today. Have a fantastic Saturday, everyone, and we'll see you on the course. Thank you all.